Thanks, George. I'm going to take this jacket off. My name's Jack Dempsey, and I'm a drunk, not a fighter. How you doing? I heard Carmen this afternoon, and she done a remarkable job. And I went up there. I was going to hug her, but I remember she's sitting there leading. You know, take that, you know. But here she. I remember then that she changed that after some years around. Why she started allowing people to hug her, so I went back and hugged her. The two speakers now, the Al-Anon speaker, boy, she was as vicious as my wife. And the Al-Anon, I love to hear an Al-Anon talk because my daughter got really fixed good in Al-Anon. She was a mess when I got sober. And I don't know, I thought maybe I'd have to have her gassed or something, you know. That would have been quite a job, though, you know. She was tough. Well, back in 1970, you know, she had American flags sewed on her hind end, hair down to her knees, and she looked like one of them things in that Star Wars, you know. I forget what they call them, things with the long hair. But she brought a boy home looked just like her, you know. I used to play drums in a blues band, and this kid was a real good drummer, and that was his saving grace. I sort of liked that about him, but I didn't like that he was better than me on the drums. That irritated me. So everything seems to balance out, you know. And my good buddy, talking tomorrow night, Bobby, him and I got to know each other when he threw up on me on a plane. We were going to, and he thought I was a nice guy because I loaned him my puke bag, I think they call it. He was running out of them. I don't know what he was eating all day. He had a bag. Everybody got one there in the seat, you know. But he had two for starters. I must have thought about it. But then he got mine off of me. So, oh, that was a great trip. But I got to know him. He's a wonderful fellow. I look forward to hearing him tomorrow night. You know, I had some trouble. Last year was like, I wish I could write it off on my taxes or something. Everything happened, you know. My wife had some health problems, and I'm in and out of the hospital, and they had to shock my heart to get my heart rate working right, and that worked out good. So I was fortunate I was healthy enough to go in and get a hernia operation. And I'm 65, you know. I mean, that's what happens to you if you live long enough, you know. Guy said he was glad to see me. I said, I'm glad to see you. He says, better be seen than viewed. So that part, I don't want to refer to the legitimate stuff there. I don't know what. Your Al-Anon speaker tonight mentioned about something about not swearing and stuff. That's my weak suit. I'm really going to try not to. I heard people say this is a program of the heart, not the gutter, you know, and stuff like that. Well, you know, you don't get all the spots off a leopard. So once in a while, it's good for new people to hear somebody up here talk like them. But I try not to do that. And I'm going to give a concerted effort during my talk to watch my language. You know. There you go. You know. And so anyhow, my story is about my alcoholism, and I just go ahead and tell it. My wife's with me tonight. Some of it makes her mad. When we were a little bit younger, I used to say a lot of great things about my wife so I could get lucky when we were away on a weekend like this. Now it's sort of turned around, you know. She used to tell me she had a headache. Now I tell her, oh, my heart, you know. We're married 48 years. Can you imagine that? And oh. That's what you call perseverance, you know. And, you know, I got married to escape. You know, I'm here to tell you, marriage is not a form of escape. You figure it out. run out, get married, everything will be all right then, you know. But it gets good, and there's a lot of things about being married that you don't expect it gets good. You know, like I got a couple grandkids that are just great, and one of them's, the boy's 25, and he's taking over my business. I'm a retired plumber, and he's doing that. He goes out to work, and I go lay on a couch, and my wife does the books and give me some money. You know, that's an alcoholic for you, you know, and I'm just happy with that. And I go to an AA anniversary or something, I take her with me, and we have some good food to eat there, and I consider that a night out. You know, I tell her, well, I took you out to dinner the other day. But she's a great lady. She's a hardcore SEAL in Alabama, you know. And she's somebody to reckon with. You know, it's very difficult to be dishonest with her. So what's that cause was another benefit for her. It has tendency to make me shut up because I don't have anything honest to say a lot of times, you know. But I'm going to tell you this story about me. I used to get all wound up, you know, and this when I had these heart episodes, I sort of almost fainted, and I got woozy and talking at a meeting. Well, I was talking my old way, you know, ranting and raving and flapping my arms around. Doctor said you shouldn't do that. You know, well, tell an alcoholic shouldn't do that. But anyhow, after he fixed me up, I seem to be all right now. So. But I'm not going to go into my childhood real big because I used to whine and cry about my stepfather for about an hour before I got into the talk. You know, not that he don't deserve it and all that, but I'd like to mention about him because I know if there's people out there that are like I was, you know, I thought, no wonder these people can get sober. You know, they got brand new cars, nice houses, their kids love them. They love their dad. You know, they talk about my daddy. You know, and well, my stepfather was a cement block with hair on it. He took some kind of sadistic glee in knocking the heck out of me. And I didn't realize until I got sober a while in AA that I made a hobby out of deserving it. I didn't realize that, you know. But then again, you know, no child deserves to be abused like that, you know. So I had a rotten childhood, suffice to say. And they didn't even have dysfunctional homes back in them days, you know. The 50s, you know. They didn't have a lot of things. They didn't share, you know. And they didn't have meaningful relationships. You either making it or you weren't making it, you know. And if you didn't make it, the guys laughed at you. If you did make it, your parents laughed at you, you know, or laughed at themselves because what's going to happen, you know. But I had a heck of a time getting started there. You know, I had an alcoholic mind, I think, from the get-go, and which is a lot similar to a criminal mind. I don't want to frighten any potential Al-Anons out there, but I've done a lot of reading about that because I didn't want to read the stuff they recommended read. You know, I mean, in grade school they would try to teach me all the capitals of all the states. You know, at that time, I didn't want to know that. I wanted to know if patent leather shoes really reflected up. That's what I wanted. But they would never tell you stuff like that. And but later on in life, I thought I could find an answer for this malady that I had. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was alcoholism. Alcohol was the medicine for everything, you know. But when I was about 15 years old, just prior to that, I had got some bad report cards, and I like to be away from home to say this because I went to plumbing school. They threw me out of regular high school, you know, because I was selling dirty pictures and library passes so I could buy cigarettes. And they didn't want me to smoke, let alone I had to steal to get the money for the cigarettes. But I ended up down as Conley Vocational High School. I don't know if they use vocational high schools in this area of the country to house marginal psychopaths. But that's what, looking back on it, that seems what they were doing down there. They took all the worst kids I mean, either the dumbest or the meanest or the smart kids that were just vicious and stuck them under one roof, you know. All boys, no girls in that school. They wouldn't dare have girls. My mother wanted to get down there with me to open house one day, you know, and she came down. I said, no, Mom, you don't want to come here. Well, she thought I was saying that because she'd find out what a rotten student I was. No, no. The guy's all pinching her on the hind end, you know, going down through the hall. My mother was aghast. You know, she couldn't believe. And after that, she sort of had a sympathetic ear for my complaints at Conley, you know. Then they had a couple teachers down there that were a lot like my stepfather. And they seemed to flip a card to see who was going to get to tarnish one of these kids with a paddle with holes drills in it. And they had a nickname for that. It escapes me what it was. You always go in a boy's room, you know, and smoke in there, and whoever has the smoke still in his mouth, if he can't hold it until the guy goes, you know, why, it comes out his ears or something, and the teacher sees that and starts whacking him, you know, which is great entertainment for the other kids there. And, but anyhow, it was a terrible school. So I wanted to show my stepfather that I got good grades, and like I say, I like to tell us here, I tell this kind of this part of my story at home. A lot of my AAs there are my plumbing customers, you know. I don't want to tell them I was flunking out in plumbing school. You know? And so, but anyhow, I got a kid in print shop become my buddy, and I didn't have very many friends, but he was one. And he gave me brand new report cards, and I used to put the grades I wanted in there. And I'd take that report card home. Well, I was going along pretty good with I wasn't stupid, so I didn't put A's in there like a jerk would. I knew he wouldn't buy that, so I put C minus, and if he cried, I'd put a C, you know, and this and that. And so that was working good. But one day I went in there, and the guy from the print shop, he was in juvenile court or something, and I couldn't get a new report card. So I had to take this old one to try to fix it. Now, we didn't have whiteout in them days. We had little hard gray erasers that when you rub that marker, it makes a hole in the paper, you know? So, in effect, I destroyed that report card. So I took it home in tatters. And I was so scared. The old man was at work, and he was supposed to come home later on, and I'm pacing the house. I'm 15 years old. And I am laboring with the probability of dying. You know, I mean, he didn't kill me, but I thought he was gonna. You know, I had already done some horrendous thing. I left his favorite paintbrush get hard. You know, that's really tough for the macho man, you know, when your boys don't see. You know, today they don't even live like that anymore. The paintbrush is cheaper than the solvent to clean it. So a lot of the new generation don't know what the hell I'm talking about. You know. But in those days it was important. I think he pulled every little bristle on. Look at this. You know. And but anyhow, I knew that he was mad enough with me that this report card being bad, and it would be investigated now, because once he found out what I was doing, he was certain to go back to the school, pull the old records out, you know. And I knew that this is going to be a capital crime, no question about it. Now, because I didn't share, I didn't bother my mother with this. Now, my mother wasn't nuts about me saying things that she couldn't do anything about. When I would be as bad as I could get, and my stepfather would be as drunk as he could get, it was like a hostile and volatile arrangement, and you don't step into the middle of that. So my mother just didn't get involved in that. So I didn't like her for that, but I didn't want to see her killed standing between me and him. And so I just paced the house. And you know, I paced the house and paced the house, and got more nervous and more worried about dying. I got in the refrigerator, and I seen sloe gin in there, and I drank it. Now, I'm here to tell you, when I drank that sloe gin, I don't know how much it was, a quart, whatever, it was almost full bottle. It changed everything. Everything I've been whining and crying about for 10 minutes, for starters, went away. And not only that, but I had an inkling that when he does come home, I just might be able to kick his ass. Incidentally, I was dead wrong about that. So anyhow, I continued going the way I was going, and I found out the answer to life, and I could never understand people that didn't understand why I drank. You know, I wanted to get married and get out of that environment, and the girl I was going with, I was in 17-year-old love with. And you know what that, I mean, I was like a giant hormone. Just bouncing all over the place, you know. And I went with her for a couple years, and I didn't even know what color eyes she had, because I was always looking at her legs. She had nice legs, so I'd always be looking down. She'd say, "Cheer up," you know, she'd touch my chin. But my wife used to listen to me when she was just my girlfriend. All the complaints I had, and I had plenty of complaints. Nothing was right as far as I was concerned. The schools, the cops, the neighbors, everybody was in my way and in my face at all times. And I didn't like it. And I felt better when I drank. Now, I didn't realize the way she would talk to me was I'd start ranting and raving about something and she'd just look at me. And she'd let me go on and on. And then she'd take them little feminine fingers of hers and just touch me on the shoulder and I'd just melt. And she just melted into me, and I wasn't worried about nothing. I didn't care if the world caught on fire, you know. It was all right. And I would complain about them, and she'd just sit there and nod her head, you know. I didn't realize that when I married her, that I married one of them. I actually married into the enemy camp, brother. It seemed like her job was to destroy my ability to take the only medicine that ever made me feel all right. And then she would tell me, I'd come staggering home with that mouth on a doorknob thing, and when I got in there, she would she'd just start, and she'd tell me why I shouldn't drink. And everything she said was the exact same reasons why I drink. I couldn't believe it. She says, "You shouldn't drink because we owe Beneficial Finance Company money." Well, they were my higher power. And where else could I get money? You know, I mean, the bank wasn't, "Oh, Mr. Dempsey, what?" You know, the only way you're going to get money is get it either off a mobster down on a corner. Guido will give it to you. Maybe if you don't pay, he'll break your legs. Or you got to go to Beneficial Finance Company, where they have an 18-year-old young man with a three-piece suit, and I'd be 28 years old or something. He'd say, "Have a seat, Mr. Dempsey," you know, and just look at you over his glasses like you were nothing. And he'd say, "What do you want?" I'd say, "I need $500." "What for?" "Not what for." You know, I mean, what's an alcoholic going to tell him it's for? I'm really going to tell him, "Well, look, I want to give about $100 to the old lady, and I want to use $400 to keep on carousing and gambling and drinking." You can't tell a man. And you know that up front, unless you are really dumb. So I would tell him I need a new iron lung for my mother. So all I wanted to do was get the money, and expedience was my God. Just get it and get it as fast as I can and get out of here. You know, and that's what I would do. You know, when I first came in AA, they talked about being honest in here. And I couldn't believe that anybody that had the same feelings and the same thing I had could possibly think it was a good idea to be honest. It's just not. So if you're going to go out and drink tonight because the speaker said something to make you mad or something, don't worry about being honest, because you're just slowing yourself down. And you're making it easy for other people to hurt you So anyhow, if I was going to go out and get drunk tonight, what would I say? I'd run in, a cop would stop me. I've been drinking, you know, and I'd be drinking for 3 or 4 days after I got started good. And he would stop me and say, "You've been drinking." I'd say, "Well, yeah, you know, I've been drinking. Well, let me tell you why before you take me out in cuffs. My blind son just graduated from medical school today. You got to use your head, you know." So I didn't believe that honesty was the best policy, because every time I was honest, I got in more trouble. And there was nothing about, "Well, it just don't drink." That was my wife's attitude. "Well, don't drink. What part of that don't you understand, Jack? What the hell do you mean don't drink? What should I do, just sit around and think about putting a pistol in my nose or what? If I'm not going to drink, then I'm a different guy." She said, "You're bad either way." Because she didn't like me when I was drunk and I was just smiling like an idiot. And I'd come out in the porch with my pants open or something and embarrass her. Neighbors would all get all tuned up. I'd park my car on his neighbor's hedges. His name was Walton, too. Can you believe that? He had a little Falcon station wagon. I mean, this was in 64. I had a 61 Plymouth Fury convertible, man. Well, I mean, that thing would knock the bricks out of the street, you know. And we didn't have them big sound systems then, but I'd done a good job on them little speakers. I'd blow them right out, you know. I had the blues going down the street, you know. And I had that top. I never stopped. And, you know, I see guys today, it's an amazing thing. Regular people, if they got a convertible, you know, they get out around the car and they put all those tabs down all around. It takes them like an hour to get started, you know. And if they have to know what the weather is, I guess they watch a weather channel, so they know whether they could possibly put the top down that night. And any time I ever rode my wife in that car, my wife would say, "Put the top down because it messed my hair up." Didn't mess mine up. The only reason my hair fell out is because my stepfather never rubbed my top there, you know. Atta boy, Jack. You know, but so I was living in a bad situation here with this Nazi wife I had, and I didn't like my job. I didn't like nothing. I had bad kids and just bad breath and everything else. And I only felt good when I drank. Now, like I say, the psychiatrist, I finally ended up in front of one of them. You know, it was in front of magistrates, in front of cops, in front of neighbors, in front of at work, in front of a big mahogany desk. You always, them jackasses that run everything, are always got a big desk where you feel like a little midget back there, you know. And the guy would sit back there and just glare at you, you know. A lot of times fiddle with papers for a while before he got back to whether he's canceling your life or not. And I had such utter contempt for those kind of people that I couldn't believe that I didn't kill one. The only thing was I really had to get drunk to seriously think about killing somebody, and then I could barely walk. And I made some mistakes and thought I could kill a couple people, and I got beat up real bad. And sometimes I beat people up, too. I don't want to tell you I didn't do that, but that wasn't my claim to fame. My claim to fame was just being a jackass of a father and a husband, and nothing seemed to work. And, you know, sitting under Christmas trees crying, you know, because I wrecked the Christmas, you know, and my wife saying, "That's good for you, cry." And she'd cry. She's always crying, always hurting her feelings. I wanted one of them alcoholic women. That's what I wanted. Somebody that I could have DTs together with. But them alcoholic women, I don't know if any of you know any of them. But if you deal with them, you know, when they, you end up getting, they'll throw your car keys in a sewer grate or something. Now, you could talk to one of them, and you really feel like you're on the move. You know, you're doing real good with this chick, and then you throw up on her. And they look at you, and they say pretty much the same thing your wife says. If there's a wife like my wife. And I'd go home, and I'd be disappointed because I wasn't taken care of. But I'd go home and approach my wife after 3 or 4 days drinking, and I'm walking around on my knees and haven't had a shave, and I stink, and, hiya, baby. And then I'd get rejected. Well, that kind of behavior of mine and what the results were in my home life drove me to see psychiatrists and preachers and everything else. And I read all these books. I was a plumber, but I was subscribed to Psychology Today. I read Maxwell Maltz's Psycho Cybernetics. I read I'm Okay, You're Not Okay. I knew I had a big problem with living life. I didn't know how to live life, and I read all this stuff, and it wouldn't help me. I mean, it didn't do me any bit of good. And I went down to see a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist heard my whole story, you know, and he says to me, "Why do you drink?" He said, "You seem to drink. Everything is punctuated with a drink. This happens, and then you drink." And I said, "Well, you know, you've been going over this stuff about my behavior and my antics and everything." And I says, "What do you think is a good name for all that stuff I do, drunk or sober?" He says, "You have, what the hell do you call it? I can't remember the name of it, but you believe that? I'm only 65, too, and I forget things. You know what it is, Janet?" My wife remembers. He said to me that I had free-floating anxiety. Now, the next time was 10 or 14 years later that I heard the synonym for that is right in the AA book, you know, incomprehensible demoralization, not to mention the other three things. Help me out here. Oh, my God. It's pitiful, I tell you. Anyhow, it's in the book. Look it up. So I ended up strutting away from him, all full of myself, and he's dumb, even though he's got a doctor's degree and everything else. I didn't care. And I tried all kinds of ways to not drink, and I had to have something, you know. I had to have something in my life that I could do with reckless abandonment. I had to. I mean, I just couldn't, I don't smoke anymore because that almost killed me. I don't even stop because you're going to die. One more cigarette, you're out of here. You know, it was a lot easier to stop, but I didn't want to stop. You know, but that's cigarettes. We'll do that some other time. I had plenty of booze and cigarettes, and I was doing the whole thing, and I would pick out one favorite for a while, you know, like I got into gambling for a while. I mean, I didn't do a lot of big time gambling, but I put my whole paycheck in pinball machines and stuff like that just to cheer the missus up, you know. And I always thought I'd hit for $20, you know. I wasn't doing that. I was flirting with girls where I was doing this or doing that or wrecking my cars, driving fast, you know, and I always had something. I wanted to eat everything, you know, and I swelled up like this podium, and my wife was giving me spaghetti so I wouldn't drink. And I said, "What come of that?" She says, "I got a fat drunk." It didn't help her, you know, with me not drinking. A lot of people can eat, and they don't drink so much, you know, and I could eat, puke, and drink. I enjoyed eating like a pig. It was not like it. Matter of fact, I even thought milk was better with pizza than beer. It's not near as effective, but it tastes better. And nothing would stop me. I just thought, I can't live life the way it's dealt to me. I just can't do it. Other people can do it, and that's the ones that have lots of money and big jobs and all kinds of respect. And I was a drunken bum. And that was why. That's what I thought it was. Well, you keep doing that, you end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You just keep up that kind of crap. And that was the worst thing I could think of. You know, I had no idea this thing was going to be like it is. And so I ended up there. I come in here January 1969. I had my last drink April 18th, 1970. So I had about 15 months there where my home group called me Jack the Slipper. And I didn't like it because I had my own idea what a slipper was. A slipper is somebody that sleazes around, drinks in the men's room at an AA meeting or something. I didn't know what I was talking about. You know, I just left here and went and got drunk. Just would bother me too much to think about all the stuff you have to do. You have to love people you hate. That's what I got out of it. I have to make amends to my wife, who has been my very nemesis since the day I said I do. She was the reason that I was tortured, and I was afraid of her. I thought she'd stick an ice pick in my ear when I was sleeping. My wife just seethed with hate at me, you know. And I mean, that really takes a romance out, you know. And the problem was, almost everything that my wife thought about me was true. So I didn't like me. And I didn't have enough guts to try to kill myself, because I figured in my mind, if I try to kill myself, I'll mess it up. And I'll end up in a wheelchair with drool running down my cheek and her pushing me around in a wheelchair saying, "Oh, there's a draft over here, Jack. I'm putting you right over here. And I'm not coming back with your shawl for an hour." You know? So I didn't want none of this to happen. I didn't know what kind of control I had over everything, and I would get so shaky in AA. I seen it work for everybody else. I didn't think they had the same problems I had. These are different problems than what they, I mean, that's why I like, you know, I'm sober a good while. I still get up here and tell you all that crap. I've heard a lot of speakers with some years get up and say, "I don't talk about my drinking anymore," you know. Well, maybe they will after they get drunk, you know. Because it's not about what a wonderful job I did after I got sober. I didn't do nothing. All I did was the steps. And it's like pulling a cat through a fence or something. I did one. I can't see anybody doing cartwheels to go make amends to somebody they don't like. So if you do that, there's something more wrong with you other than alcoholism. And that's just my opinion, you know. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to mention this. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. But I have opinions. But I am so grateful that most members of Alcoholics Anonymous are very good to that. I mean, they do that. And I hope that everybody does that. I'd hate to see us get political. Oh, my God. I mean, slit your throat before you do that. Because we cannot win. Because that is not a spiritual thing. This is a spiritual program. So do not, you know, if you get me out in the parking lot, say something, I go, blah, 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 blah. You know, I ain't going to talk about it. I go home, rant and rave about my own opinions. You know, and then my wife tells me to shut up, so it's working. You know. But that's the 10th step, you know. So anyhow, I end up in AA, and I couldn't get the second step. The first step, I couldn't get that because I was powerless over alcohol. They said, "You're powerless over alcohol." "Yeah, that's why I drink." They said, "Well, we want you to not drink one day at a time," which is like a, you know, spinning it so it sounds easy, you know. But I knew better than it being easy, you know, because I knew what not drinking was, because then I come in AA and they say, "You're drinking." "No." I say, "How you doing?" "I'm fine. I'm not drinking." "What makes you ask me if I'm drinking? You see me go in someplace and get a drink?" "No, Jack. I mean, don't get out of here. Get your shorten a knot, dear. Jeez. It's just easy does it." "Oh, that again. Easy does it. Day at a time, you know. How important is it?" Boy, I always hated that. You know, people will say that to you if you're on fire. So you got to be careful about who you're dealing with, because there are some people who are, they're not really, they're nice AAs, you know. And I never seem to attract the better class of AAs. I seem to get the kind of AAs that were just sneaky and they done things to you. And laugh, you know. Tim Jack, you know, I remember one time I was always arguing and fighting with born-again Christians. Oh, man, I'd get in rage with them. I'd stand there with like a whip in a chair trying to keep away. Well, I didn't know, but my sponsor was sending them to me. I thought, how can I possibly get this many of these kind of people that I can't get along with? You know, it was miles away from that, you know, many of us would not socialize together, you know. Oh, my God, I was in such deep doo-doo with that. But anyhow, it went away after I quit being crazy about it. They quit coming to me. So anyhow, I was doing fine. And I finally got sober. But I thought that if you're part of sober alcohol, you're going to drink. And that was my argument with myself. And so I couldn't stop. I had to come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I had to get in that chapter of the agnostics and really get after it. My wife's looking at me to watch now. And she wants to get up Cracker Barrel before it closes or something. I'm sorry, everyone. There's still a chance. She bought me a nice wrapped bottle of nitro for my for Christmas, and I thought there's hope, you know. But anyhow, I started running with those guys. I better get quitting here. But I was late getting up here today a little bit because it took an hour and a half to feed us over that. So I waited an hour and a half, and I would have been definitely late if going back for seconds took more than 20 minutes like it did. But I didn't know all the speakers were on the thing tonight. I'm probably one of the worst guys you can put, especially last, because you got a chance with a hook of pulling me off here. But I like to do this. I like to say to everybody that even though I got stuff that I'm all excited about telling you about, that I'll have to do that on a one-on-one basis if you ask me. And I'm not going to, you know, stay here and get talking so doggone long that you'd fall asleep or something. And that would hurt my feelings, I'm sure you would. I'm always worried about myself. I want to say something about myself before I quit. When I was drinking, I was late for work all the time because I was up all night fighting with her about drinking half of the night. And so I was riding the bus to work, and one day the boss had told me that if you're late for work one more time, you're fired. And that made me so upset that I drank all night. And sure enough, I slept in. And her trick was to pour ice water in my ear to wake me up when it was urgent. And she was so mad at me, she refused to do that. You talk about mixed emotions, you know. But anyhow, it was pretty late, and I ran down the hill, and I just got down there in time to get on a bus that I could possibly get in that plant before the whistle. And I wasn't grateful. I had the capacity to be grateful. I was just, oh, that's good. You know, I get on a bus, and some guy had a heart attack on the bus. Now, I wanted him put off the bus. Because I knew that my boss ain't going to believe his heart attack. Because that was generally the caliber of my excuses. And I knew that the people on that bus, if I would try to manipulate into putting that guy out, that they'd all turn on me. And then I would have a big fight on the bus, which probably hold me off even more. I thought maybe I'd go along the lines of maybe treating him in transit, you know. That maybe I'd ask him, is there a doctor here, you know, or something? But they stopped the bus like they should have, and they dealt with him in there. They didn't drag him outside. And I'm sitting there just frosted because I knew I was going to be late for work now. And But how can a person be like that? You know, how could somebody be like that and not be something? An alcoholic or something? Because I was ashamed of the way I felt. But being ashamed of something that you can't help yourself or stop yourself from doing is no thing that's going to help. That just makes it worse. Now, not only are you a low-down, dirty, rotten low-down, but you're also ashamed of it. You know, it'd be one thing if you were somebody that was really bad, and I don't care. You know, I was bad, but I cared. And that's the worst part. And you take those two things, and you take alcohol and quench that, and it goes away, you're not going to drink, huh? You're going to drink unless you do something as wild and crazy as Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what come to me. That's what was given to me. And now I'm grateful about things that I used to hate. I can't believe it. I got a great big family. I have this grandson, 25 years old, him and his new wife, or wife of 2 years, I guess, wanted to go with Janet and I up to Jamestown. I was talking up there, and they wanted to come. I thought I wasn't hearing right. You want to come with us? Yeah. We want to get away for the weekend, and we know that, you know, it won't be much money to go up there. They slept in the same room with us, you know. We had to behave ourselves. Matter of fact, we got out of there, you know. We tried to give him all the time we could because we want another great grandkid. Because his sister gave us, we got a 2-year-old great grandkid now, which is just, it's marvelous. I mean, you have to be there. You have to get sober and fight and spit and swear and do all the crap that they make us do in here that just drives you crazy before you can get some kind of a life going that's worth living. You know, that's fun. I have to look back now. Of course, I'm all damaged now. I got heart problems. She got problems of osteoporosis or some kind of crap. And, you know, I mean, it's just like we're both checking our pills all the time. We sit down. That's one of our hobbies, is sit at the table. My wife's saying, don't you have to cut that one in half? Because, oh, yeah. To get there in one piece, so to speak, to get there where I can enjoy this kind of life is absolute miracle. It's worth everything I paid to get here. I could have never done it with Alcoholics Anonymous. I could never like myself well enough if I would have been saved some other kind of way, like hit me on the head or something. Save, you know. I would never got enough out of that, because what come out of this is God's working me way I'm supposed to be worked. You know, I'm a bad mouth plumber, drunken bum, pinball machine playing, carousing, rotten, dirty, low down blues digger, you know? And those kind of people, just if they're going to get this really good stuff that you see on the outside of AA, I think they got to have brain surgery. I think that the people like me got to be there for God to use. God don't evidently want me to stand down a railroad station or bus station giving out prayer tracts. He wants me crawling in a car with a guy that's still puking and I'm trying to keep his head away from the door. Whoa, what's you getting on the dashboard? You know. And somebody that can swear at a guy that calls up at 4 o'clock in the morning and tell you he broke a shoelace or something. He thinks he's going to get drink. Somebody on the other end going to say, what the hell are you doing there calling me up at this time in the morning just to tell me that? If I do come over there, I'm going to smack you. Different guys need different sponsors. A lot of guys like me needed those nice guys. I got nice guys. I mean really nice guys sponsor me. Good fellas. But the one that really helped me most was the meanest guy I could find. You know, and I'm, you know, him and I got to be friends, and he turned out to be a great sponsor, but he turned out to be a friend instead. And we had so many of the same thoughts that it was evident that wasn't helping me anymore. But he told me one day, he said, that's probably all you get, Jack. Just keep up the good work and keep your mouth shut, you'll be fine. You know? And I know from talking to him and others that nobody gets perfect in here. But you get in here and you're in here for a long time, you just don't worry about it anymore. You know, you get tired of saying, oh, I got to get better. Why? You get better. I start giving up stuff. I've been giving up stuff for all these years, and finally there's nothing left to give up. I like to give up my medicine, you know, like I know better than that. You know. I am so grateful to be here. It's so nice that you have asked me and have me and my wife down here. We've had a wonderful time. God bless you people. Thank you.